the evening to see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, thank you. Our next public hearing is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 115, Articles 1, 10, 11A, 20, 21, 23, 25, and 27 by amending Sections 115-4, 115-5, 115-75, 115-83.10, 115-156, 115-195.4, 115-159.5, 115-161.1. Counselor, is it really necessary that I read every one of these into the record?
No, I don't believe technically it is. If we just refer to it as the ordinance to amend the zoning.
Let me give you a clue. This is the ordinance to amend all of our commercial zoning classifications. It is as proposed, it is a very extensive overhaul. For anyone here that has an interest in it, we would very much like to hear from you.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest we have a brief PowerPoint presentation. It's sort of one that you've already seen, but we thought it'd be useful. That was sort of more at the beginning, just to go through it. And Kyle and George are here from AECOM. They were the ones that were really helpful and instrumental in kind of sorting all this out in terms of where things go.
Okay, gentlemen.
Good evening. I'm Kyle Gabrunson, a land use planner with AECOM Corporation. We're going to give a brief overview of recommended changes to the zoning code. This is basically the same information that you saw, I believe, back in March, I think it was, where we're talking about new zoning categories. Since that time, we've taken that information, we've had a stakeholder meeting, then we've gone through and actually drafted the language that would change the code in your ordinance.
And I will say, just that stakeholder meeting, when we went through the categories and what it would do, there were some questions and there were some constructive suggestions. For example, dealing with square footage of things, that sort of to match them up with more realistic, like I remember like drugstores was one, I think, like, you know, there's kind of a standard size for a Walgreens or a CVS, that type of thing. You know, those were the kinds of comments that we got, but there weren't any objections. You know, I think it was fairly positively received at that meeting.
Yeah, we really didn't have too many comments, actually.
Mm-mm, no, there was a good discussion, but there wasn't any, like, quote-unquote comments on it.
Did they read all 44 double-page double backs?
No, at that point, we hadn't
we
done
have
the ordinance.
The draft at that
it was
point.
What
it
was
the, overview.
The information that made its way into that right. Written form.
I've read it twice. Do not give me a test.
I'm with you, Mr. Ross.
It's pretty extensive.
Yeah.
If you recall, when we met last time, we talked about the problems with the current situation where we have very few zoning categories with lots and lots of uses within them. We've just been talking about rezoning properties to CR1, which right now has about 200 uses in it. So that is one of the issues. It was thought that we had too few commercial categories. Really, we have one primary category at this time. Too many permitted uses within that. We sort of have a one-size-fits-all approach to commercial zoning at present. Currently, you have the urban business district, which I don't believe there's any land actually zoned urban business.
Yeah.
The neighborhood business district, the B1 district. The closed C1 district, which you have land zoned C1, but no new lands can be zoned into that category. And the one-size-catch-all category is a CR1 zone.
Just while on that slide, for the benefit of the commission, for the urban business, the reason we don't have any is because that was a zoning district set up for any municipalities that were, because they didn't have their own zoning ordinance, relied on the county, and so it set up a place where you could have within towns basically a business district. But now I think every one of them but one has their own, you know, town government and administers their own zoning, so it's basically a moot district and chapter in our code. I just didn't want you to think it's one that just nobody used and it was a tool that's just not been utilized. It's not applicable, really.
Yeah, any longer. So what we discussed the last time we got together is a proposal to basically add 7 new zoning categories. The existing zoning or commercial zones will be closed, similar to what the C1 zone is today. Creating a business community zone, a B2 zone, which basically would replace the neighborhood business zone. The business research zone, the B3 district, which was for larger scale office professional park development. And the associated businesses that would service those uses. A medium commercial district, which is your standard commercial district, which would be somewhat equivalent to the CR1 district now. A C3 district, which would be a heavy commercial district. And this district, one of the interesting things about it, we can go into more detail later, is that anything with outside storage would be permitted in this district, so some of the boat storage uses that you've heard today will be applicable for this district. The planned commercial district, the C4 district, is just that. It's for large-scale retail commercial developments, similar to the Overbrook Center that came before you previously.
That's the one where we could impose conditions, though, right, as part of it. So it's kind of like a commercial RPC.
Is this what when we talk about having a commercial plan development ordinance, is that what this category is for?
Yeah, that picks that up. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the zoning application would be in conjunction with a site plan.
Yeah.
So you'd see a site plan.
I think it's important for the benefit of the public for us to point out that these new zone, and correct me if I'm wrong, Counselor, but these, as I understand it, these new zoning classifications will be zones that are applied for. There's really not going to be any organically rezoned properties, at least at this time. So if you currently have AR or CR1 or whatever, and for whatever reason you want to change the zone, most likely it's going to be an AR parcel, and you wish to change the zone, you will be choosing from among these new categories. If your property is zoned CR1 today, it can stay that way and will be governed by whatever was in the old CR1, but it will be considered a closed district. So you can't get any more of it. If you're going to change the zone, it's going to be to one of these new categories.
With a site plan.
Well, just on
only
C4, and I really think it's kind of amusing that it's C4. It's a rather explosive, district.
Yeah.
No doubt will be if anybody applies for it. But that's by design. The whole premise was that on these large retail developments, we want to have the ability to address change of zone and site plan at the same time. And that's what the purpose of that. But I'm especially pleased that it received the designation C4 because it's appropriate. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. The next category is the C5 service limited manufacturing. That's a more intense commercial district, warehousing, limited light industrial type uses. Light manufacturing, things of that nature.
In that one, though, when you say, because we talked about this, it's not like a parallel district to the
right.
light industrial. It's more of those types of things that are sort of related to a commercial use, you know, or retail
with
use.
With a retail component
to
it as well. A good example is just north of Millsboro, there's a Doggy Biscuit Bakery now, where they're actually baking the biscuits on site. So that would be an appropriate.
And wouldn't like another one be maybe, you know, like granite countertops, you know, where they're mm-hmm. selling countertops in the back there.
They've got a retail showroom plus their manufacturing
right.
The same site.
Because that's always been one that's kind of gray, for example. Is it industrial? Is it commercial? You know, this would help them know where to go.
Right. And then the institutional zone, which would be a zone for quasi-governmental uses, medical facilities, things of that nature, well-located locations.
Okay, so I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Your heavy commercial zone, is that what we are? What's happening to the old LI1, LI2?
That's still
staying.
They're staying.
We're not changing any of that, right? These are just to replace C1 and B1 in urban.
Yeah, so think about, like, to use the countertop, or the, yeah, the granite countertop place. You know, if they're kind of, it's a retail component, but they're really doing some manufacturing. You know, I know there's been situations where that may not be appropriate, like, you know, next to a shopping center. But they're not going to want to come in maybe also for LI1, because they're not really industrial, and that brings with it a whole bunch of questions. It gives them like a more.
It's also a good place for a winery, or a distillery, or a straight-out brewery. So it kind of falls in, you know, that'll have some of that retail component, but also have more of that quasi in, industrial.
Sounds good.
Which brings up another point, and I don't know that it's going to be in here. One of the things our code doesn't do anything for is breweries or microbreweries, or there's a variety of other things. The permitted uses in our code relate back to like 1974 when Mr. Schrader was presenting applications. So there hasn't been a lot of update in terms of what's permitted. And you think about, you know, some of those uses that we have now, again, they don't necessarily slot cleanly in anything. We tried to get rid of some of the old items that just frankly don't exist for whatever reason, and also bring in new ones that we know do exist.
And be consistent with the state ABC requirements and things of that nature.
In that light, I don't notice, like, farmers markets. I didn't notice, we've had some discussion in the comp plan, discussion about technology centers.
Yeah.
They aren't specifically mentioned. And in my experience is when something is not specifically mentioned, it gets hung up. Should we add those?
Well, I would say on the farmer's market side, that's probably okay, because that falls into the retail, you know, so we're good on that. But the technology center, that was one I know, Mr. Ross, you had mentioned to me in discussions.
Yeah.
And that's sort of a thing that evolved as we were going through this. And I agree, that's probably one, as I expect the commission's going to defer on this tonight, because we've got some staff recommendations that we want to get to you in a sort of a form of a motion. I suspect that's one that we're going to want to drill into a little bit and come back with a recommendation, because I agree that's
maybe in that C5.
Yeah.
With those things that are not really industrial. But
yeah.
Still.
Yeah.
Or that B3, which
or
is
B3,
that the
research.
Professional office kind of zone.
Yeah, whichever. I mean, you know, I'll defer to your advice on that, but I mean, since it's not in there, it just bothers me.
Yeah.
Both of those.
It wasn't an intentional omission. It was sort of a
process. It's 40 some pages, yeah. 87 pages total. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. Okay. Just briefly, the B2 district would replace the B1 district, which is smaller scale commercial to serve a small residential neighborhood, relatively small in scale, with a minimum lot size of 5,000 square feet, maximum lot size of 3 acres, and maximum building size of 35,000. So it's kept small by those bulk standards.
How does it differ from B1, the B1 we have today?
Right now, I believe 75,000.
You can go up to 75,000 square feet in B1 currently.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
So this scales things back just a bit.
Okay.
You can have multiple buildings of 35,000. But that's not an overall cap. That's just building
size. Yeah, but
you've
got a maximum lot size of 3 acres.
Yeah, so
you're not going to have too many multiples.
No. So it will be.
You're not
going to
have
that
multiple. Yeah.
Okay. The BP1 district again is the business research. This would be for offices, research centers, some medical facilities, and the uses that would support them, like restaurants, dry cleaners, things of that nature that would support the people working in those zones. In terms of bulk standards, there aren't any proposed for this district at this time.
Just to be clear, I think on the table in the ordinance, that's referred to as B3, not BP1. So,
okay.
Yeah. I think that relates back to the original slide when we first started. So yeah, that's fine.
The next district, again, is the medium commercial district. It's to support retail sales and performance of consumer services, variety of retail professional services and businesses. Typically, it would be located along primary roads, arterials, and collector roads. Minimum lot size is 15,000 square feet. Maximum gross floor area for the building would be 75,000 square feet. What sets this district apart from the next one we'll discuss is outside storage, and we'll get to that in a second. Now, the heavy commercial zone, the C3, is more auto-oriented in nature. Auto sales, auto repair, boat sales, boat repairs, things of that nature. And this district allows for outside storage, so boat yards, one of the applications that you heard earlier today, would be appropriate for this district. Minimum lot size is 1 acre, maximum floor area is 150,000 square feet in this proposed zone. So, the C4 district is the planned commercial district. Again, this is for large-scale commercial retail developments with mixes of uses. It also allows mixed use with residential. Again, this would be in conjunction with a site plan when the applicant applies for his change of zone. Maximum lot size is 3 acres, and that's the only cap on this zone. There is no cap on building size, so this would be an appropriate zone for a large Lowe's or a Target or something of that nature. Okay, this is the district that we talked about that has a industrial limited manufacturing component, but also has to be tied to a retail component. So whatever is being manufactured there also has to be sold from that site or have a sales office or something on that location.
Let's say if you were in the utility construction business,
mm-hmm.
Where would you fit into this?
Actually, I believe it is this zone, if I'm not mistaken.
So you'd be okay.
All right.
And if you were a,
I can't hear you.
If you were a utilities construction or any other kind of construction mm-hmm. business, you would fall in this C5 would be the appropriate
likely.
Place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just wondering. Just trying to get in my head what's going to go where, because
right.
that's going to be the great challenge of this moving forward.
So like a Melvin Joseph type operation mm-hmm. where he I guess you have some outside storage.
Right.
Is that C5 outside storage?
I believe outside storage is allowed in C5.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's in C5?
Okay.
Okay, good. So you have outside storage in C5 and in heavy commercial.
Yeah, and the heavy commercial, like I said, is more auto-oriented, automobiles, boats, that type of business. Minimum lot size for this zone is 15,000 square feet, and maximum floor area is 50,000 square feet per building. So.
And what is it under the heavy? Can you say those sizes again? It's 50?
15,000 square feet for the lot size.
That's the minimum.
Minimum. And 50,000 square feet for the building.
Is that, Karen, is that each building or?
It's each building. You can have multiple buildings, okay. But the maximum size for a building is 50,000. Your question about the heavy commercial, the maximum lots or maximum building size is 150,000 square feet.
For
the heavy commercial, the C3.
That was how big again?
150,000.
150,000, three times bigger.
And remember, we're not changing the industrial districts. Those will still remain in place.
Yeah, yeah.
Without any change. So that might be an appropriate location for some of the facilities that you're talking about.
Let's say someone changes zone to whatever. Are they still allowed to farm in these parcels mm-hmm. while they're, again, I didn't notice that in the...
But that's covered by the more general part of the code with the pre-existing non-conforming use. So, you know, if it gets rezoned and you've got something that's underway there, you're still allowed to continue right. doing it.
And then in the explosive zone, the C4 zone, the mm-hmm. I like that, Mr. Chairman. It comes with a site plan. Does that have a sunsetting date on it?
Yes, because it's the same type of site plan that we'd go through for final. So it's 5 years. Yeah.
Does that sunset the zoning as well?
No.
Mm-hmm. I mean.
Oh, well, that's true.
No,
yeah, no, you're
one,
right.
I think on that one it will.
I said, yeah, that because that becomes like an RPC, well, so it would sunset.
It should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it would revert back to AR mm-hmm. at that point, if that, right. or whatever it
or
was.
Or whatever it was before.
Before.
Yeah. Whatever it was before.
Okay.
I'll double check that too, just to make sure. Yeah, is that the commission's desire that it would?
I think that's what we were.
Yes, I think it is.
Unless you're in the mood to make a giant loophole for stuff.
That's been the loophole that's been created on the residential side with these MRRPCs. Well, the RPC sunsets and the MR doesn't.
Right.
And you can end up with something that you never intended to have there. Yeah.
And this
is sort of the same thing. So, I would think if it doesn't get built within a certain period of time, it just reverts back to whatever it was before, and they have to start over again.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's tied to the site plan.
And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to be able to tie those things together and allow them to be addressed all at one time.
And I suppose if there was a substantial change in site plan, that would trigger that as well, right?
And have a fight with that.
Yeah, it depends on what the change is, if they would come back in for a new site plan, or if it's something completely different,
Well, that's one of the biggest problems with these larger projects, which is what we're trying to address, is that, this is a concept plan, and, man, it just bundles everything all up. And, if they make, down the road, they can make significant changes to that, and we would have no input whatsoever. The public would have no input.
Most likely need to be a new application.
Yeah. One other question, I guess, regards to transportation and all this. I mean, is it worth considering the county getting into requiring an additional amount of feet for public easement for the roads?
Like, in other words, like greater setbacks or whatever, or a dedication? I think
just adding to the dedicated public right of way and leave the setbacks just the way they are.
Yeah.
The problem with making a setback increase is that we do allow flexibility in parking, especially in used car lots and stuff like that, parking sometimes, and setbacks. If we just expand the setback, we really haven't accomplished what we want, is to gradually, serve everybody's purpose. I think it's, I think it's worth discussion, because we can do it piecemeal, one application at a time, or we can do it through ordinance. I don't know. I'm not as old as Mr. Schrader, but I can't. It's your right, Dennis. Mr. Robinson broke that can of worms open. So, as I recall, back in the day, all the roads that we have, other than Route 13, 113, and perhaps one, there weren't any easements purchased. This was just a deal made between the public and the state that said, we need roads, so we need, for our economy. I don't view this as that much different. We've got to a place where we have a lot of roads that need expansion. The right-of-ways are limited. If we do it via ordinance, everybody's treated the same. We all know we're giving up maybe 15-foot on major collectors, or whatever, 10-foot on secondary. I think that's something that we need to start thinking about rather than doing it one application at a time.
I know almost every DLDOT, every application I've seen for the last couple of years, Delta, I think, routinely requests additional right-of-way.
Yeah.
As just a matter of approval.
And, is that something, considering that statement, do we want to be in that?
No, that's fine. What I've got to look at, because there's procedural requirements for adopting an ordinance, I've got to see if where we'd put that would be within what was introduced, or if it's a separate.
Separate.
That'd be the only thing I've got to check in procedurally. But I'll look into that.
Okay.
Because it may be. That may be something. I'll just have to figure out where that best goes and where we deal with it.
That's one of the things that, in my mind, I was thinking about as we progressed in the comprehensive plan discussion when we get back to mobility. But it's pertinent today, too. So why not go ahead and see where we're headed with that? I know there's going to be complications, non-conforming uses. There's a plethora of buildings, homes, whatever, that are literally on the public. And so they'd be non-conforming. We've had that before, but to the degree that you would probably, solve is not the right word, but you would start to go towards a solution on the overwhelming majority of properties.
So can I get on that topic? So like on the applications that came in tonight to recycling, the crushing in Georgetown and then the other one down near the Maryland line. What would they fall under?
I think probably industrial, I would think. I don't think they would fit in any of these categories.
Yeah, I think they're probably LI activities, either one or two, or even HI, depending on the noise and the
Okay. What about the, we have talked before about some of the agricultural uses that are becoming business uses that are, I mean, even just when you get to more than just a couple chicken houses in your backyard, mm-hmm. would they fall into any of these, or is that a completely different subject?
I think what we've been aiming for is to try to make those uses permitted under the AR zone. In other words, these ag-related industrial, I don't want to call them industrial, but ag-related business activities that would be permitted under that zone, because the whole the drive there was to try to avoid creating a zoning change requirement for those folks in an effort to increase the speed to market for those types of activities, and just to try to identify those things that might, you know, be ag related that could occur in ag areas, and then just go ahead and let them be permitted in that zone. That's it.
And that's something that we're kind of working on also, separate from this though.
Okay.
Because that's not commercial.
Just wanted to make sure it was not another one of those.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up, because it is something we need to think about, you know, while we're thinking about the other piece of that. If there is a situation where it needs to be in one of these, then we do need to know which one's going to go in.
I think that then we'll talk about that
and
part of the future
that
land
use. I was
going
to say, yeah, when we get to future land use, let's try to deal
it
with
that. It pulls in the maps and also the how we're dealing with it.
Okay, I-1.
And the last proposed new district will be the institutional district, which is for government agencies. We did have schools in this zone. Medical facilities, fire companies, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that they're well located.
Yeah, we ran into just, you know, like we've seen some schools come in as a conditional use, and that just seems weird that you would have a conditional use. We're not good at putting conditions on a school. This way, if it's zoned to I-1, they can go. You know, it's site plan, but it's appropriate for that, and, you know.
Would sports at the beach be I-1?
No.
No. Uh-uh.
That would be more of a commercial use.
Yeah, that would be C2, I believe. Yeah.
Or the Sussex County Parks and Rec.
Prison.
Go ahead. Where's my bowl? Where's the bat? Where's the bat?
Just poke the tiger.
What is this, your nightmare?
All right. I know. Yeah. All right. It's been a long
day.
I'm a little chippy tonight. So.
Let's move on. Let's move on.
So, and I don't know if you want to get into this or not, but one of the new things about the new format in the new districts is that everything will be in table format. So it'll be a lot easier for people to find the information that they're looking for. And this is an example. All the uses are listed where they're permitted, the size. So it should be much more user-friendly.
And you have a copy at your desks this evening.
Right.
I apologize. It breaks it down by categories, and then clearly if there's nothing in the box, it's not permitted. If it's permitted, it's a P. There might be a footnote or two saying if it's an accessory use or if it allows outdoor storage. There's also the SE is the special use exception to the Board of Adjustment. A C is a conditional use. So it kind of breaks it down, makes it a little bit easier based on the types of uses, you know, for all of the commercial zoning districts right now that we have, including the ones that potentially could be closed and the new ones. So you can just go straight across and figure out where and what it could
and
be very helpful.
And what the approval process would be.
Yes.
This is great, but this is a cheat sheet, right? This
yes.
is not really part of the ordinance.
Yeah, there's some tables at the end of the zoning ordinance. This would be added as a table, but the ordinance is going to be
right.
What,
gotcha.
Yeah, the ordinance.
Yeah.
This is very valuable as a cheat sheet.
Yeah.
Actually, it was more valuable to read this than it was to read all the.
Going through the
no offense.
Itself. No, I agree with you.
All of the uses.
It's an easier way to go.
Yeah.
This way.
Yeah. All of the uses listed are actually in that section of code, but they're all together. In that table.
I think the one that has the multicolored columns on it,
mm-hmm.
I think that's actually the easiest thing I've seen. Yeah.
Yeah. We can,
I think Mr. Schrader might have one. Would you wave that just again so people can
that
see?
That was one of the really talking points.
Mr. Robertson was kind enough to send this to me, but it's three pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It contains all the...
All the uses.
Contains the summary of each of the permitted uses and the bulk standards.
Yeah.
Each of the districts. I've seen the tables.
Well...
I like this one better.
Yeah, this is a concern of mine. I mean, it's in regard to the extent of that we're changing this. I'm often reminded, and I think it was Thomas Jefferson that once said that the law should be written so as to be easily understood by the common man. I don't know that we've done a very good job of that in the last 200 years, but it's certainly a good goal to shoot for. And if we have a tool that somebody can use to help them figure out where they're supposed to be, because we certainly want that to happen before they get in front of us, you know, and have spent their time and money preparing. And I'm sure the staff's more than willing to consult with folks, but the more tools we give them to use, the better off we're going to be. So I'd like to see this, but and also maybe something like that become part of the ordinance.
Yeah, we can definitely look into doing that, because it's the same information, sort of just characterized a little bit differently, but I don't see why we couldn't figure it out.
There's a lot of information there. We might be able to color code it or something.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
Where do temporary type structures, a tent, I know like Mile 16 out here, they have gatherings and they'll throw a tent up in a temporary stage, maybe have a band, maybe somebody has this big sale and they put a tent up at, in a parking lot.
That actually, we're sort of separately working on that as well.
Well, there's somewhere in there, there's this discussion of a building and a structure.
Well, and what you get into is, yeah, there's a discussion going on at the council level about special events or tents and things like that. We're looking at that separate from this to clarify that, to streamline it and probably make it more workable and more realistic for what people are looking to do. So,
but I mean, those people in these districts, then they would have to go through that separate process if they wanted to do something along.
Which is no different than what they'd have to do now, you know. So hopefully at the end, again, separate from this, at the end of that, they'll be in a better spot.
Okay. All right, sir.
Very good.
One thing that we do need.
Are we up to questions and concerns now, or what?
I think Vince has some.
Well, no. So staff, we've been compiling some, you know, comments or, you know, recommendations as far as just picking up errors here and thing, you know, that we're going to get to you. Hopefully that in the form of a motion that you all can consider. One thing too we need to talk about is the effective date on it. That needs to be filled in. You know, we need to give people enough lead time, you know, so that if they're applying for CR1, you know, and this gets adopted by council, they don't have to do a U-turn and sort of start all over again. You know, I don't know, in terms of a recommendation to council, you know, whether you think it's 3 months or 6 months from the date of adoption, you know, how much lead time it would give for somebody, you know, who's a property owner to get with their engineer and their attorney and sort of figure out what they need to do.
Well, the other thing, you have to give enough time for the pipeline, for whatever is in the pipeline to work.
Well, and the idea would be is it wouldn't apply to anything that's been formally submitted to P&Z. That's how we've always treated that. So it's more, you know, we don't want to...
New application.
Yeah, you know, it's adopted on a Tuesday, and somebody's ready to file Wednesday morning, and they got to start all over again.
How much time does council need?
What do you mean in terms of?
If you do it free, I was having the same thought, but if you do it from adoption, it doesn't really matter, because if they adopt it a year from now, then it's 6 months after the adoption or whatever. If they adopt it a month from now, it's 6 months after.
Yeah, rather than picking a date. That's what I was thinking, you know, 30 days or 90 days or 120 days.
I have had a couple of folks ask me why we were doing this before the land use plan, but I guess we don't really know the answer other than our council apparently wants us to do it before.
Yeah.
You know,
it's something that's been on their radar.
Okay.
Well, and you know, so I guess one of the practical answers to that is too is and we're going to have to deal with it either in the current comp plan or the future one. Assuming that we're going to do something similar to what's in our current comp plan, you know, we have the environmentally sensitive developing area town centers, I think developing areas, low density areas. You know, there's that chart, and it says in each one of those what the permitted zoning districts are. you know, we almost have to have this adopted first to be able to do that chart and the 2018 plan. You know, otherwise we'd adopt the plan, adopt the ordinance, and have to go back and amend the chart. You know, it's a little bit of a chicken and egg thing right now. So okay. If we adopt it, say this summer, early fall, while we're still in the 08 plan, we would have to go back and just amend that one table and run that through plus.
Okay. Well, all right. Okay.
So you kind of can't win on that, you know. Right.
Okay.
So you have to have a public hearing.
Well, or that, or you thing? Just make the, you could make the effective date of the ordinance the effective date of the adopted land use plan.
What's that?
If you coordinated the effective date of the ordinance with the adoption of the land use adoption and approval of the land
that
use
plan, that could be a year away.
That could be your triggering event.
It could be. I mean, it's just a year away.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. I mean, the room's not full. That. You know, the people, the public that's affected by it are fully aware. I mean, it's been a pretty public process that this has been discussed for a while, that the people affected by it are generally okay with it. So that would mean that the sooner we adopted it, the better, because what we're trying to do ultimately is cut down on the number of CUs that we're hearing, which is what has got us started on this conversation to start with, notwithstanding what Chairman Wheatley has talked about on site plan review on that C4 issue for a while. So, I mean, I just, with that in mind, I just hate to see us put it off for the full year, even though I think you're right, that's obviously the easiest way mechanically, because you don't have to have public hearings on the OA plan, which we're having enough meetings in my humble opinion.
If we did do, if you wanted to adopt, it would be a very specific reason to amend the current comprehensive plan, and it would just be to that table, so we wouldn't be opening everything up. It would just be very specific.
Okay.
So
yeah. Okay. Okay. We're going to rewrite the OA plan while we're rewriting the OA plan. No, that's not happening.
You have had a rough week.
No, but so the other reason, Mr. Ross, seriously, is one of the concerns that we have heard from everybody is that, you know, it takes out that fear of the unknown, you know, when you're applying for something. And so, you know, on the developer side, they can present what they're actually going to do. And on the public side, they should have more of an understanding of what could go there. You know, it does a lot to eliminate, well, they're saying they're going to do this lovely project and it's going to be something else. You know, because it sort of slots everything more specific.
Well, let's see when you guys get the edits back, and then we'll decide on a time frame after adoption, and council can always change it.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Are you good?
No, it's good. Yeah.
Okay. Commissioners, unless somebody has any questions, I'd like to go ahead and get some
public
input from
the
public.
Really, come on.
All right. I know there's at least one or two that are here with an interest in this ordinance. Mr. Schrader, would you like to share your comments with us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, let me begin by complimenting Mr. Robertson, staff, Mr. Gulbronson. Come up with a 43-page ordinance trying to rewrite the commercial code for Sussex County at the same time you're trying to do the comp plan. And it's got to be very difficult in terms of time consumption, and you've probably burned out a couple times along the way. So my compliments to you. I spoke briefly to Mr. Robertson this afternoon, and I have some drafting issues that I'm going to give him a call about next week, and they're not significant or material to the ordinance. Use of the words "and or" as an example is something that I don't think is good drafting, but Vince and I can work that out.
Okay.
There's a few others, just like so.
And
you
there's
know,
some
like
spelling issues.
Yeah, and there's a few places where it came through as secondary, where it should be like accessory, you know, and things like that. Yeah.
Right, and I was going to comment on that. There are times in here where I'm not sure that the language in the ordinance reflects the procedure that you're authorized to do, either by the state statute or the balance of the code. Accessory versus secondary is one of those issues. There is a restatement in each of the zoning districts about parking and what the parking waivers may be, but it's identified as a special use exception, and I don't think it's a special use exception. If it is, that's going to go off to the Board of Adjustment. If it's a variance, it goes off. And there may be a better way to consolidate all of that into one section and then provide a methodology and a standard by which the Planning Commission can make decisions concerning the waiver of or adjustment to minimum mandatory parking requirements. And that may be something that Vince and Kyle want to take a look at as we go along the way. As general practice, you know, I'm here a couple times a month. I don't do as many commercial activities as I used to since the Townsend Village Center was my last big major one. But that was 1974, right after the Borough Pit, right? What I'm getting at is sort of goes like this. And Kyle introduced at the beginning how there was uncertainty and there were so many multiple types of permitted uses under the current zoning code. I took the moment to add up, and I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not good with math. If I was an accountant, I wouldn't be here. My father was an engineer. I am not a scientist. But I came up with 289 permitted uses under the various zoning categories that are identified, at least in the colorful chart that I like to use. 289 permitted uses, I think, is more than what Kyle started at. He was at about 130. I remember when I worked here and Jack Allen was around, we only had 57. And the point that I would like to make is that every time you come in here on a Thursday night, there is either a land planner, an engineer, or an attorney, or a developer who's found the 290th permitted use, or a use that's not involved, or the 291st. And I'm not seeing in here conditional uses or something that would allow you a little bit of shading other than the provision that says, if I have something and there is a question as to whether or not it fits into the 289, I can come back in and have a Thursday night meeting with you all and you will tell me whether I'm in the 289. The problem I want to address is that the creativity of the people that come before you exceeds the ability to get it into English and in an ordinance. There's always somebody who's going to push the envelope. I can name a couple attorneys, not me, of course, but others, who will always look for the edge of the table or find a way to find how big the envelope can really be when they get into something. And a couple of the examples that I am concerned about is that if you start with the premise that's set in the code that says uses not permitted are prohibited, right off the get-go, I got 289 permitted uses, and I find number 290. The one that I looked at as an example, setting aside the one that Marty used for farms, agricultures and uses in farmers markets, is mixed uses. I didn't see a provision for that. But one of the designing, if it's in there, tell me. I didn't see it. But if you have a traditional, where the judgment of the commission, a use is not specifically.
Yeah,
but it's similar. But that doesn't provide for mixed use where you would have commercial activities on the first floor, residential apartments, or condos above that. And that's become...
Well, and I will tell the commission, so this is something I was going to say at the end, with mixed uses, I've had some conversations with other people in the development community, and that is, and actually that came about after even this was introduced. That's something that I think I'm going to work on sort of next. We need, whether you call it mixed use or a commercial RPC for residential, so that you can do a mixed use with residential over retail, because that's really separate from this. And the problem is right now it's not as much what's permitted. We even get into problems with bulk standards and building width and building separation. And if we just amended, I think we can do it with a fairly easy amendment to the RPC section. It would give you that design ingenuity, you know, that we do for residential stuff that you could apply to mixed use.
And a good example of that is where the deli went in next to Pep Up on Route 1 across from Walmart. There's a deli and two or three office retail spots on the first floor, and then the upper will be either offices or residential. Yeah. And I think the same also applies to, the Shell project there where the Social Security office is. Yeah. They have mixed use in there. In that RPC, and I think it should be provided for somewhere in one of these districts as a particularly beneficial use to consider. Because of the way the ordinance is written and the way these categories are set up, and again, I'm looking at the color chart and I've looked at the table, there is this issue of exclusivity. I don't think, and I may be wrong about this, is that if I go from one district to the next higher district, I am necessarily permitted to do what was in the lower category. And that may explain why there's 289 uses, because they've all been restated. It may be simpler to say that if you're in a B2 and you go to the next level of B4, B3, C4, whatever it is, that you are permitted to do all of the things that were in B2 and the additional new permitted uses. It may make it easier to understand what's going on here. It's kind of a wedding cake effect in the sense that you have each tier providing for a continuum. I don't know whether that's something the commission or the council wants to do, but I think it works for people. There were some definitional issues in addition to accessory versus secondary. The use of buildings and structures is confusing because the commencement of each separate section says no building or land shall be used, but you may have structures that are not buildings. And that again, I live on the other side of this. I've got people who are going to come to me and say, we're going to run with that because we're not using a building. We're going to use a structure. And I think that some clarification is going to be beneficial to the commission and enforcement. I was a little confused by the difference between public and private. Public seems to be governmental only, but there may be private enterprises that have public facilities. I'm going to use sports as the beach as an example. It's owned by a private company, but it is open to the public, and I think some clarification.
That's one we've had. I mean, even like that's what drove the height limit questions a couple years ago is public in everybody's mind. You think, okay, that means it's owned. That's a government building. Where when you looked at the definition, it was it open to the public? You know, like
yeah.
So yeah, we can go back and look at that.
The last two things I want to bring up, and then I will be very brief about those. In terms of agricultural activities, unless somebody has changed the Constitution, if I have a farm, it's not a non-conforming use. It is constitutionally permitted under the Constitution of the state. You have the right to regulate structures or buildings, as the case may be. But in terms of me being able to take a 100-acre field and get it rezoned to C4, and still continue to operate as a farm, it's still a permitted use. I don't know that it necessarily needs to be placed in here, but I know that from experiences I've had at one of the towns I represented, where we created an agricultural industrial overlay zone in order to take care of those things such as granaries, meat processing, chicken processing, or whatnot. It became a friction point because either the city council or the people that lived within the community or the applicants thought that the only way they could farm was to come and get a rezone to an AIOZ. And that's not what the intent of the AIOZ was, nor is it necessarily required if you're doing agricultural activities. And I would just ask that you give some thought to that and maybe address it.
Yeah.
The last comment I want to make is about the time of adoption and the time of the effective date. You guys are talking about adopting the ordinance and then giving a period of time to make it become implemented. I'm going to argue for a year. And the reason is that if you get above 75,000 square feet of commercial activity, you've got to design it fairly well in order to comply with your own ordinance. But you've also got to go through the PLUS process. And you've got to allow for that time period to pass and to get your public comments from the 26 reviewing agencies, get them reincorporated into your design and then get back in here. If you tell me that I'm going to have to apply for a C4 and I've got something that's been through, let's say, what's a good number, Kyle? 12 months, 18 months of engineering and review, and then suddenly you changed the zoning classification, I don't have necessarily the time nor the economic ability to back up, start over, and get in tune with your ordinance. So I would encourage you to think about extending that effective date out long enough to allow for people in the pipeline to finish what they're doing and to give enough warning to people who are thinking about developing real estate to be able to comply with the ordinance in the future at the time they begin their designs and whatnot. So with those thoughts in mind, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak on the ordinance? Anyone on the commission have any questions?
No, and what we'll do is, like I said, we'll circulate some staff comments, you know, just start getting that into a motion form for you all.
All right.
Well, thank you.
And with those closing thoughts, we'll close the public hearing. We invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening and see if we make a decision, or you may wish to call the office in the morning. That completes our public hearings. Moving on to other